In this week's parasha, which is chock full of really big things, including, of course, the famous hand switch and the brachot to the sons and the funeral cortege of Yaakov and the oath of Yosef to his brothers, Pakod Yifkod. And it starts with the oath of Yaakov to Yosef, which is parallel. So the parasha starts and ends with a man issuing an oath to his family to promise to bury him back in Israel. In the middle of that is this one line, which is almost seems to be a throwaway line. When Yosef hears that Yaakov is sick and he comes to his bedside with his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, which leads, of course, famously to the hand switch, and Yisimcha Limka Ephraim Echim Menashe, Yaakov opens up his speech to Yosef with a bizarre statement. The whole speech is bizarre. It's zigzaggy, and it doesn't seem to make much sense, meaning the words make sense, the sequencing doesn't make sense, and the inclusion of certain things doesn't make sense. And that includes this line. After telling Yosef that Hashem appeared to me in Luz, he blessed me, he told me I'll be a congregation of nations or of armies, and I'm adopting Menashe and Ephraim. Then he turned around and said, Vani bevoimi padan, meta alai Rachel be'eretz Kanan baderech. On my way from Padan, Rachel died on me. On me, the implication is that she died suddenly on the road. Be'eretz Kanan baderech, right? In Canaan, on the road, ba'od kivrat eretz lavor frata. Now that phrase is the key phrase in this whole thing. Ba'od kivrat eretz. We'll leave kivrat alone with there being a kivrat of land, lavo efrata, to come to Ephrat. If we start with the assumption that Ephrat is, as we'll see later, Beit Lechem, and we assume Beit Lechem means Beit Lechem Yehuda, which we don't have to assume, and I'll explain that in a little bit, then what that means is that Rachel died on the road with one Kivrat Eretz away from Beit Lechem. Remember, they're leaving Beit El, they're going south towards Hebron, and on the way Rachel dies. So that means she dies a Kivrat Eretz, which we have to determine how far that is if we can, away from Ephrat, meaning north of Ephrat, and we identify Ephrat as Beit Lechem, that we know that Rachel is buried X miles north of Beit Lechem, X being Kivrat Eretz. And then he says, V'akbarasham b'derech Ephrat, he Beit Lechem. And I buried her there, again, on the road to Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. Okay, question is, where is Kever Rachel? That's the real question. Now, we're all familiar with Kever Rachel as a historic monument. We are familiar with Kever Rachel, same place, as a powerful experiential place of tefillah. And by the way, we're also familiar with Kever Rachel, meaning the same Kever Rachel, as a vital cog in the negotiations that emanated from Oslo. And the question is, what area in that district was going to stay within Israeli territory? And it was actually something that the Israeli government was going back and forth about till finally it decided, mainly based on emotional and historic ties, that Kever Rachel has to remain. And I'm sure you've all been to Kever Rachel in the last bunch of years, and you know that you kind of go between two walls to get there, and it's a real fortress. The question is, where is Rachel actually buried? Is she buried there? Is she buried somewhere else? And normally, I wouldn't ask the question. I mean, it says Kever Rachel. Rachel's buried there. But the problem is that we have Sukkim and Tanakh that seem to take us in a different direction. All right, so let's take a look. First of all, we have the passage where Rachel actually dies. Because remember, what we're reading in our parak is about a recap where Yaakov says, this is what happened then. Let's hear about the event. Vayisumi Beit El, and this is going to give us a little more geography. They traveled from Beit El. That's after Hashem appeared to Yaakov in Beit El, and he blessed him, and he changed his name officially to Israel. And they traveled from Beit El. They're going south. Vayiod Kivrat Haaretz Lavo Ephrata. That same phrase, Kivrat Haaretz. Vatelet Rachel Vatkash Belita. Rachel goes into childbirth, and she has a difficult time. Vayibach Shotach Belita, and she's having a difficult time. I never understood this line. The midwife says, don't worry about it, it's another son. And how the two connect a little bit odd. She died Vatikrashmo ben Oni. She called the child ben Oni, which can be interpreted in two very different ways, almost opposite ways. Ben Oni could mean the son of my strength, which is, by the way, what Yaakov is going to say about Reuven in this week's parasha, Kochi v'reishit Oni. Or it could be ben Oni, the son of my mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, as an Onen, because she's dying as he's born. V'aviv karalo v'nyamin. But father changed his name. Rachel gave him the name ben Oni. Father changed his name to Binyamin, the son of my right hand, the son of my strength, making it clear that the meaning of Ben-Oni should be strength and not mourning. Okay. Batamot Rachel died. Batikaver b'derech Efrat nahi beit lachem. She was buried b'derech Efrat, which is the road to beit lachem. V'yatsev Yaakov matzeva k'furata. And Yaakov sets up a matzeva. This is the fourth of four matzevot that Yaakov sets up in his life. The first one is the morning after he has the great vision at Beit El. The next one is on his way back from Lavan when he finds out that Hashem intervened and told Lavan in a dream, don't mess with Yaakov. The third, just now in Beit El, when Hashem promised him that he would have children and more children and the land. And now when Rachel dies. Himat seven korat Rachel arayom. And that's kever Rachel arayom, which means at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, people knew where Kever Rachel was. That's all it tells us. Meaning Ad Hayom is, Moshe Rabbeinu was writing it, said, that place, it's Kever Rachel. We all know where it is. All right, that's Kever Rachel. Very nice. Question is, again, where's Kever Rachel? Now, again, we would start with the assumption, Kever Rachel is Kever Rachel, like who's buried in Grant's tomb. But we have a problem, and that problem starts here with a passage in Sefer Shmuel. In Sefer Shmuel, and the background of the story is that the people come to Shmuel, a very famous scene in Perek Chet, and they say to Shmuel, you're old, your kids are rotten, we want a king. I mean, that's pretty much what they say. Shmuel's very upset by it. He comes to Hashem. Hashem says to him, you think you're upset? Think how upset I am. They rejected me, just like they rejected me. It's like Avodah Zarah, they want a king. But you know what? Why don't you tell them what a king's going to be like? Read them Mishpat HaMelech. And then we'll see what happens. So Shmuel says, okay, you want a king? Let me tell you, the king's going to take all your fields. He's going to take your servants. He's going to take your animals. He's going to tax you, right? Hoping the people are going to say, all right, we don't want a king. Surprise, surprise, people say, we want a king anyways. Now, big interesting, just as a side point, machloket in Masechet Sanhedrin about whether or not the things that Shmuel listed are really rights of the king or not. In any case, Hashem says to Shmuel, Shema b'kolam, give them a king. So Shmuel says to everybody, go home. And the notion is that I'm going to find you a king. The next thing that happens is we're introduced to a family of Binyamin, a fellow named Kish, who's a wealthy guy. And he has a son who's a really great guy and very tall. His name is Shaul. And Shaul goes off looking for his father's donkeys because his father's donkeys went wandering. And he wanders through all of Eretz Binyamin. And he's on his way home, and he makes the statement to his caddy who went with him, you know what, at this point, father's going to start worrying about us and forget about the donkeys. So they're about to go back, and the kid says to Shaul, you know, we are right near the Navi. We're right near the Roeh, actually. Let's go to him. He'll tell us where we should go. Right? Meaning, the simple is, he'll tell us where the donkeys are. Shaul says, we don't have any money to bring him. You have to bring tribute to the Navi. He says, oh, I found a little coin here. All right, so they go up to Ramah, where Shmuel lives, and they meet. And a very interesting meeting because they don't know what Shmuel looks like. Because, you know, their phones didn't work that well. The pictures were fuzzy, black and white. And so Shaul meets him and says, Echan Beit HaRoeh, where is the house of the Roeh, the seer? And Shmuel says, Ani HaRoeh, I'm the seer. Which he kind of gets back for that in Beit Lechem later on. And so Shmuel takes Shaul up to the top of the mountain where they're having a korban, and he seats him at the head of the table, and he makes him feel all honored. And then at the end of that scene, he stays over the next morning, very early in the morning. He's there on top of the roof, looking down on the whole town. And Shmuel says to Shaul, he kisses him on the forehead, and he anoints him, and he says, God has made you the Nagid. And now here we go to our point. He then gives him three signs. And the three signs, the first of the signs is you're going to meet two people at Kever Rachel, which is Bigvul Binyamin Betzaltzach. We'll take a look at it right now. Source three. He takes the oil, he puts it on Shaul's head. He kisses him. God has anointed you to be a leader over his people. Not Melech, but Nagid. First sign. When you leave me today, you're going to find two guys. You'll find them at Kever Rachel, which is in Binyamin's territory, at a place called Tzeltzach. Now, before we go further, we have to ask the question, where is Binyamin's territory? And we all know Binyamin's territory starts at the northern tip of Yerushalayim and goes north. So that means that if Rachel is buried in Binyamin's territory, then that means that Kever Rachel is north of Yerushalayim, not where our Kever Rachel is today, right? By the way, Rachel didn't migrate, just to put that to rest. And by the way, these two guys that you meet at Kever Rachel are going to say to you that your father has already given up on the donkeys. He's worried about you. Okay. You'll go from there. You're going to come to a place called Elon Tavor, which is a tree. You're going to meet three people. Olim El Ha'elohim Beit El. You'll see why I'm going through these signs towards the end of this year. Is these three people are going to be on their way up to Beit El. You're coming from Beit El. They're going to be on their way up to Beit El. And they're using Beit El as a worship site. Echad Nosei Shloshag Daim. One of them is carrying three goats. Echad Nosei Shloshit Kibrot Lechem. One's carrying three loaves of bread. Echad Nosei Nevel Yain. One of them is carrying a flask of wine. Talu Lecha L'Sholem. They'll greet you. And at Nulachash Telech, they're going to give you two of their loaves, and you should take it. Then you're going to come to Giv'ah. Giv'ah Elohim, we assume, is the town of Giv'ah, which is Shaul's hometown. You're going to come home. Ashasham and Sivei Flishtim. There happened to be a garrison of Flishtim there, which is by what's motivating the people to ask for a king because they want to overthrow the Flishtim. When you get to the city, you're going to encounter a whole band of Nevi'im coming down from the mountain. Now notice, we've gone from two people to three people to a whole band. Coming down from the Bama, they've got a whole bunch of instruments they're playing, and they're having rapturous prophetic experience. You will have Hashem's spirit come on you. You will join them in this rhapsodic prophetic experience, and you'll become a different man. Those are the signs. Now, the part that right now concerns us is the part that's in yellow, which is you're going to meet two people at Kever Rachel in Binyamin's territory at Tzeltzach, and that is clearly north of Giv'ah, because you're going to continue going south, and you'll ultimately get to Giv'ah. Okay, so now, before we go further, let's take a look at this map. And you can see, here is Beit El. See, I'm pointing to it. Further south of Beit El, and this is the ancient road, which is, by the way, today pretty much Road 60. You go further down and you find Ramah. Here's Ramah. And you go from there and you get to Giv'ah. Here's Giv'ah, and there's Yerushalayim down there, which would mean that Kever Rachel should be somewhere in this territory, right? It has to be north of Giv'ah, south of Beit El, somewhere in this territory. That's where it seems like she's buried, based on those psukim. We have one more passage in Tanakh to deal with in this context, and it opens up a door, because the truth is that we just said Ramah. Question is, which Ramah? So just a parenthetic but important note about place names, toponyms in Israel. It's not just Israel. I'll start with the Simpsons. What town do the Simpsons live in? Any Bikias here? What town do the Simpsons live in?
I knew 25 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's the same town 25 years later. It's Springfield. Yeah. Springfield. Why did Matt Grains pick Springfield? Because there's a Springfield in, I believe, every one of the 48 continental states. Right?
Oh, That's funny.
Springfield, California. There's a Springfield, Oregon. I've been there. There's obviously Springfield, Illinois. There's obviously Springfield, Massachusetts. Springfield everywhere. There's a big Springfield. Why are there so many different Springfields? So evidently, there was a spring there, and that makes sense. Now, there are a number of towns in Israel called Ramah. There's at least two of them. Because what kind of town would be called a Ramah? A town that is what we call in the West a mesa. A mesa is a flat top mountain. I mean, you climb up and then you have a flat top. That's a Ramah. So there's Ramat Binyamin and Ramat Ephraim. There may be more. I'll give you another example, which is more powerful, which is Gilgal. There's at least five different Gilgals in Israel, which, by the way, leads to some interesting confusion in Yehoshua and in Sefer Dvarim. Gilgal. Why would a place could be called Gilgal? Because it has big round rocks, Gilgal. So which Ramah is this is a little unclear, but for our purposes, it won't matter. Either way, it's north of Yerushalayim. There is an Arab village called Aram, which you encounter right after you leave Yerushalayim, going north towards Pisgat, towards Pisgat Ze'ev. And that is Ramat Binyamin. There's a Ramah further north, which is Ramat Ephraim, which is Shmuel's town. That's where Shmuel lived. That's where Shmuel's buried, etc. The reason I'm bringing that up is because of the mention of Ramah in this famous song. Kol Amar Adonai, Kol B'Ramah Nishma Nehi V'Chit Amorim, Rachel Mevaka Al Banah. So, famous passage in Yirmiyahu, one of the most beautiful passages in all of Tanakh. Hashem says, a voice is heard in Ramah. Now, what does that mean? So, the Targum says, Ramah means up in heaven. But simple pshat is, a voice is heard in the town of Ramah. And what's that voice? The town of the voice of Rachel weeping for her sons. Which, by the way, means Rachel is situated somewhere north of Yerushalayim in Ramah. Probably Ramat Binyamin. Maybe. Now, the truth is, this doesn't prove anything. Because Kol B'Ramah Nishma means it's heard in Ramah. Doesn't mean it's coming from Ramah. Why would it be heard in Ramah? So please take a look at this passage from Yirmiyahu Mem, passage 9. Yirmiyahu is found in a place called Ramah as he's getting ready to be taken out in captivity in chains. It doesn't happen, but by the Babylonians, which means Yirmiyahu was in a place called Ramah. So here, Kol B'Ramah Nishma could easily mean it's heard in Ramah, not from Ramah. So this pasuk really does an impact on where Kever Rachel is. All right, the rest of the passage in Yirmiyahu is very famous, but not our topic today. So the question is, where is Kever Rachel? So there are two different problems in our pasuk. One problem is, what is Kivrat Eretz? And the other question is, what's Ephrat? Now, Ephrat is identified as Beit Lechem in both passages 1 and 2. So we think that solves it. Ephrat is Beit Lechem. And of course, in the modern day, it's very hard for us to think of Ephrat as anything but Beit Lechem, because we all know people living in Ephrat. We probably have relatives and close friends living in Ephrat. However, it's not so simple. Let's first start with Kivrat. You take a look at Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor, Talmid of Rabbeinu Tam, 12th century Parshan in France, part of the school of Rashi. What does he say about Kivrat? Lashon Kabir. Kabir, as you may know, is a poetic word in Hebrew, which means large. You know it because you know the phrase Allahu Akbar, which means God is great. Doesn't mean God is a rat, means God is great. Allahu Akbar. Same word, Kabir, big. So he says Kivrat, the Chaf is part of the word, and the Tav is a suffix. Kivrat, Aretz, means a very long way. Which means, and then he explains, V'lachem lo holicha ad Ephrat. That's why he didn't take her to Ephrat, which the Bechor Shor assumes was an already established and inhabited place. Why didn't Yaakov bring her to Ephrat to bury her? Because there was a long way to go to Ephrat. He also didn't have a place to bury her there, but that's besides the point. The Bechor Shor is identifying Kivrat as meaning a long distance. And that takes us to a wonderful comment, which is also has a wonderful historic footnote to it. One of the most revered and studied and delighted upon commentators on Chumash is the Ramban. Where did the Ramban live? So to answer that question, you have to ask when. So the Ramban, for the first 60 years of his life, plus almost 70 years of his life, lived in Spain, in Catholic Spain. And he was famously involved in the disputation in Barcelona, which he won evidently hands down. And he won so convincingly that King James V came to Barcelona and came to his shul and greeted him in his shul and gave him a bucket of gold, not on Shabbos, and then threw him out of the country. So Ramban says, as long as I'm thrown out of the country, I'll make Aliyah. So Ramban ended up in Israel and lived the end of his life, the last few years of his life in Israel. The part that concerns us today about that, although that's always an interesting story, is that the Ramban added to his commentary on Torah after he came to Eretz Yisrael. And recently, a couple of scholars from Bar Ilan published a book of the Ramban's additions to his commentary on the Torah after he got to Israel. And this is one of them. And you can find this in the standard Ramban. He writes Kivrat Aretz, right? And then he says, Menachem Pires Lashon Kabir, same thing as Bechor Shor, meaning a long way, which would mean, by the way, that it was a long way north of Beit Lechem where he buried her. Kabir, a long distance, right? And then Mahalach Rav, a long distance. And then he then says, V'anachon mashach hashav over David kamikimchi kikaf v'dimyon. He says, I disagree. I think the chaf is a prefix, and it means like, ki vrat aretz. And barai says, means to eat a meal, like sudat havra'a. And there he says, meaning that it was about the distance of a meal's walk that long to Beit Lechem. And then he says really something delightful. He says, ze katavti tchila. This is what I originally wrote. V'achshav shezachiti uvati anid Yerushalayim. Now that I have merited to come to Yerushalayim. It's a really cool little window into this perush. Praises God for coming to Yerushalayim. Ra'iti b'nai she'en bo kvurat Rachel l'Beit Lechem, min kvurat Rachel l'Beit Lechem, afilu mil. He says, I see that where Rachel is buried, and from there to Beit Lechem is less than a mile, Roman mile. And therefore, he disagrees with the previous Perush, etc. Right? So now, and by the way, the comment, the Bechor Shor, that he obviously, it's far away, because otherwise he would have brought her into the city. So the Ramban responds to that. The problem is that the Ramban was looking at a monument that is known as Kever Rachel, which is at the spot of our Kever Rachel, but that doesn't mean that that was where Rachel was buried. It's a monument that arose probably not long before the Ramban's time, maybe during the early Crusader period. Ramban came during the middle of the Crusades, certainly well after the first three Crusades, I think. So the question is now, what do we do with the psukim? We've got not only psukim, but we also have midrashim to take us in a different direction. In the Sifri is the Midrash Halacha on Dvarim. We have the following statement about Binyamin. You know, in Zot Abraham, Moshe blesses all the tribes, and he blesses Binyamin. But Meir Omer b'chokos shel b'na meta. Rachel died in the territory of her son, which would be either Yosef or Binyamin. Yosef, it can't be because Beit El is the very bottom tip of Ephraim's territory. So it must be that mean that she was buried and she gave birth to Binyamin. Binyamin. So notice that Midrash is something very bizarre. It assumes that Rachel is buried near Beit Lechem, and it calls it the territory of Binyamin. But we all know Binyamin's territory is north of Yerushalayim. So how's that Beit Lechem? Very strange. And how's that Ephrat? One more line about this, and then we're going to go back to Sefer Yoshua and get a clue. The Midrash, Reshit Rabba, tells us the following. Very famous Midrash. Talmud Rachel to Gaber B'derech Ephrat, she died, she was buried in Derech Ephrat. Commenting on the same thing that Bechor Shor said, why did Yaakov bury her b'derech Ephrat? Meaning, why on the road? Why not off on the side somewhere? Yaakov saw Baruch HaKodesh that there were going to be exiles passing that way. The fichach farasham, therefore he buried her there. Kadesh teme vakeshet aleihem rachamim. So she should be there as they pass by and pray for their return. Kenamar, haru dichtiv, kol brahman ishma, etc., etc. Now, by the way, kol brahman ishma is Yirmiyahu. Which exiles are we talking about? The exiles, the Jews being taken to Babylonia. They're being taken to Yerushalayim. What route do you take if you want to go to Yerushalayim, from Yerushalayim to Babel? What direction do you walk? You walk north. You have to walk north all the way through Aleppo, all the way till you get to the headwaters of the Euphrates, and then you come down. Which means they're going north of Yerushalayim and they're passing Kever Rachel. Rachel's praying for them. Which means this Midrash also seems to be saying that Rachel is buried north of Yerushalayim. But we have the Sifri, we have Sefer Shmuel that makes it very clear that Rachel's buried north of Yerushalayim. We have the Sifri that makes it clear that Rachel's buried in the territory of Binyamin, but strangely says, and that's near Beit Lechem, which is odd, because we all know Beit Lechem Yehuda. And we have this passage here that Rachel is buried on the road that the exiles would pass. So there was a fellow. How many of you have ever been to Ne'ot Kedumim? Ne'ot Kedumim is a biblical reserve not far from Odin. It's a fantastic place. It was started by a fellow. I had the zechut to meet him. He passed away a number of years ago. His name was Noga Haruveni. Real beautiful guy. He's a secular guy, and he was somebody who was absolutely committed to Tanakh, and he built this Tanakh preserve. He was very well versed, and he wrote a commentary on Sefer Yirmiyahu. In his commentary on Sefer Yirmiyahu, about which is all he focused on was sights and views, etc., of Eretz Yisrael as reflected in Sefer Yirmiyahu. On this passage, he tells the following story. He says, "I was always puzzled by this passage and the problem where Rachel is buried." That I remember, and this is remembering from before 48. Walking near Nachal Prat. I don't know if you've ever been to Nachal Prat. Nachal Prat is the extension of Wadi Kelt further west. It's called Nachal Prat. I went hiking there. You're hiking, you jump in the water. Very nice. Nachal Prat. There's a monastery there. Nachal Prat. I remember walking in Nachal Prat, which at the time was the source of water for Yerushalayim. It's about 9 miles north of Yerushalayim. It's in the middle of the territory of Binyamin. And then I realized that city is mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua. Right here, it's highlighted among the cities of Binyamin. Right? What are the cities of Binyamin? Uveit Arava, Utsmarayim, Uveit El, Behavim, Behapara, Veofra. Para, why is it called Para? Well, I'll ask you this. Why is Prat called the Prat, the Euphrates River? Why is Efrat called Efrat? All because they are fruitful areas. Efrat is near Beit Lechem, which is a place of lush grain growing. So he says, that's not the only Efrat in Israel. And by the way, if you look in the Sefer Ezra Perek Bet, you will see that there are not one. You look in Yehoshua, you'll find not two, but look in Sefer Ezra, you'll find three different cities called Beit Lechem. What's the famous Beit Lechem? Bethlehem. What's Beit Lechem? That's Beit Lechem. That is Beit Lechem Yehuda. Beit Lechem where the story of Ruth takes place. Beit Lechem Yehuda. Beit Lechem Yehuda, where David comes from. There's another Beit Lechem we find in Yehoshua, which is Beit Lechem Zevulun. Why would another town be called Beit Lechem? Why would any town be called Beit Lechem? Because it's surrounded by grain fields, and the city in the middle is where they do the business to process the grain and sell the grain and buy grain, etc., etc. If you look in Ezra Perek Bet, you will find that Shevet Binyamin also had a Beit Lechem. As he posits, that Beit Lechem was in the area of Nachal Prat. Beit Lechem he Efrata. And I don't know if he points it out, but you notice in the two passages that we have, passage one and passage two, it's not called Beit Lechem Yehuda, it's just called Beit Lechem. The Beit Lechem of Ruth is always called Beit Lechem Yehuda. The Beit Lechem of David is always called Beit Lechem Yehuda. So Nogak says the Beit Lechem of Rachel's burial is right here, Beit Lechem Binyamin. Meaning that she's buried north of Yerushalayim in the area of Nachal Prat. Now, why would that have happened? And now I have the following story to tell you to put it into context. Yaakov is walking, and we know the road. The road is, again, very close to Route 60, the modern bypass road, and it goes all the way from Shechem all the way to Yerushalayim, and then south. Yaakov is walking on this road from Beit El towards Hebron. It's what we call Derech Avot. And now he's got a wife, and the wife is pregnant going into childbirth. So he veers off the road, and he wants to go to somewhere near where there's going to be water. So he goes towards Nachal Prat. And on that spot, off the side of the road, she gives birth, and she dies, and he puts up the matzeva there. Makes sense. End of that piece. Noga mentions that there are these five buildings on the side of that road. And by the way, when he was there was no road there. It was just the ancient road, biblical time roads. Now there's Route 60. He said, I recall that there were five structures near that road that didn't fit any model we knew about architecture. And those structures were structures that went back at least to Bayit Sheni times, if not older. And the locals refer to them as Kubur Bani Israel, the graves of Bnei Israel. Strange. What are they doing here? Kubur Bani Israel. And so his argument is that this was the place that Rachel was buried. And as a result of that, Jews went back and buried their dead there also. And Kubur Bani Israel, and that these structures were kind of structures like built human, like man-made caves. To bury him. So about 20, it was 20 years ago, 20 years, 20 and a half years ago, I was driving with my teacher. He picked me up in Yerushalayim in the middle of the night to go at 3 a.m. to go to the Shomron where he lives, to Ofra. And in the car, I said to him, where is Kubur Bani Israel? He immediately got off the road because we were just passing the spot. In the middle of the night, it was just when the Intifada had started, we got out of the car and we walked around. And he showed me the structures of which one was destroyed when they made the road. And this is Kubur Bani Israel. He told me the following story. He had brought a group there on a tiul. And in the middle of the tiul, an old Arab walked by. The guy looked 400 years old. And he said to him in Arabic, what do you guys call this place? And without missing a beat, the guy said, Kubur Bani Israel. Everybody knows that that's what these are. Well-known place. So Noga's theory, which I think has a lot to recommend, it is this is where Rachel is buried. Kubur Bani Israel. It fits all of the markers because it's south of Beit El, it's north of Givah. It fits the description in Sefer Shmuel. It fits the description in Bereishit because it's B'derech Ephrat Tahi Beit Lachem. It's on the road to Nachal Prat, which is Beit Lachem of Binyamin. It fits the Midrash that says Binyamin was born in his territory. This is in the middle of the territory that Binyamin ends up getting. And it's right on the road that the exiles would take going north. It fits all of the criteria. There is, however, a different tradition. And I can't finish this year without mentioning this other tradition. I'm going to have to do it quickly because of time. But nonetheless, there is a Tosefta. The Tosefta in Masachet Sota, which talks about what all the things that happened on the day the Bnei Israel crossed the Yarden, and that they went great distance with these big rocks and went up to Har Ebal, etc. Kayotze Badavar, they say, similarly, you will find the story when Shmuel tells Shaul, you're going to leave me today, and you'll find two people at Gvul Binyamin B'Tzeltzach, and they say, the perspective of Tosefta is the Kever Rachel is where today's Kever Rachel is, south of Yerushalayim. Chalkoshel Yehuda, in Yehuda's territory. And they quote the Pasuk. Ben Efrat al Chalkoshel Yehuda. They refer to Efrat as the Beit Lechem Yehuda. Alamar lo achshav, shani me'aber mecha, hinam akvurat Rachel. The way they interpret the Pasuk is, Shmuel says to Shaul, right now as I'm talking to you, they're Kever Rachel. They're going to walk north, you're going to walk south, and you're going to meet them on the way. But you're not going to see them at Kever Rachel. That's how they interpret the Pasuk to make it work. So again, within the context of all the Pasukim that we've seen, that becomes difficult. Just to point out, though, there is an approach which a teacher of mine, Professor Yoel Yitzur, wrote up and was published in Sinai as a response that defends the Southern theory or the theory that Kever Rachel is where Kever Rachel is. First of all, he deals with the pasuk in Shmuel. And again, I'll have to do this quickly, but he points out that the three signs, that's why I went through the three signs, the three signs that Shmuel gives Shaul are symmetrical, they're measured, except for one problem. In all three, as you could see, says you're going to walk, then you're going to go, then you're going to go. The second stage is you're going to come to Elon Tabor, you're going to come to Givah. The third stage is you're going to encounter, encounter, encounter. The fourth stage is, though, you're going to see people going up to Beitel carrying these korbanot, and here you're going to have people coming down, and they've got all of these instruments. And here it describes the people as being with Akrat Rachel Bigvul Binyamin, meaning that location is thrown later on in the text. So what he suggests is that Im Kurat Rachel actually should be a description not of where you're going to find them, but rather where they are right now. They're right now at Kurat Rachel way south. You'll meet them on the way up. That's how he defends it. But of course, the big question is, how do you defend the Midrash that says that they were that Rachel was buried on the road in order to be there to pray for the exiles that are leaving on that road? So he quoted from, I think it was Eusebius, who mentions that when the Jews were taken captive by the Romans, they were actually chained and taken south towards Hebron from where they were sold on the slave market and then sold out, which would mean they would actually be passing from Jerusalem, they'd be passing south. And he says the Midrash is not referring to Babylonian exile, but rather to the Roman exile. I revere my teacher. I love him dearly. I still think that the evidence strongly points to the notion that Kever Rachel is north of Jerusalem, that the simplest read in Sefer Shmuel is you're going to meet them at Kever Rachel, and that will be on the way to Givah. And the final upshot of it is, of course, then people turn around and say, and by the way, if you give the shiur at Kever Rachel, you have to give it quietly. People are very upset if they hear.
One minute.
But if the question people ask is then, so is Kever Rachel not a special place? I'd say it's a very special place. What makes Kever Rachel a special place? And it's important for us to note this. We do not worship the dead. We are very distant from worshiping the dead. That was an Egyptian thing, not ours. We don't go to cemeteries to pray because the cemetery is a holy place. The opposite. The cemetery is a place of tumah, most severe kind of tumah, tumah mate in some respects. We go to a cemetery for several reasons: to honor the people who are buried there, to gain inspiration from their lives and use that as a vehicle for our own prayer or for our own inspiration and growth. Kever Rachel is a special place because people pray there. They pour out their hearts there. They weep there. That's what makes Kever Rachel special. If Rachel is buried there or is not buried there, not my concern. And I'll give you just by the way of a parallel that years ago, I went to Nebi Samuel. You guys know where Nebi Samuel is. It's outside of Yerushalayim near Maaseret. Beautiful spot. The view from there is amazing. Nebi Samuel means Hanavi Shmuel. And so a lot of people believe that Shmuel Hanavi is buried there. And there's a Crusader era building there. And there is a spot where they think Shmuel is buried. And there's a big parocha that was all at Tfilat Hana. I remember the last time I went there, I've been there a few times. The last time I went there, I walked in and I saw a woman weeping her eyes out. And I could tell it's probably a woman who has not been blessed with kids. And she's praying to Hashem to please, like Hana, to bless her with children. She's weeping at Kever Shmuel. Shmuel's not buried there. The text tells us that Shmuel is buried in his home in Ramah. Ramah is way north of there. And so does that make this place not special? Of course it's special. But who is Nabi Samuel? Probably a church father of some sort. But does it make the place special? Of course the place is special. Why is it special? It's special because people daven there. That's what makes it special. One last story about Nabi Samuel, just to finish off, is a story about a tour guide who took his tour up to Nabi Samuel, and he gave the speech. And in his speech, he said, here Samuel is buried, the great prophet who anointed the two kings of Israel, Saul and David. Very good. There was one kid who's actually listening to him. He was giving the speech in Hebrew, and most of them didn't understand Hebrew. They weren't listening. They were taking pictures. One little kid was listening to him. A kid, a teenager, listened to him. The next day, they went to Kever Shmuel in Yerushalayim. The guy gets up, makes the same speech. Kan Kavur Shmuel Anavi Shema Shach Shnei Melachim Shmuel Shmuel David. And the kid was actually listening. And the kid said to him, I understand, yesterday we were up on top of a mountain, and you said Shmuel's buried here. And now we're down here, and you say Shmuel's buried here. How can that be? You said that's easy. Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Bet.